Today's Taisho is case two in the Mumonkan, Hyakujo's Fox. When Hyakujo Osho delivered a certain series of sermons, an old man always followed the monks to the main hall and listened to him. When the monks left the hall, the old man would also leave. One day, however, he remained behind, and Hyakujo asked him, "Who are you, standing here before me?" The old man replied, "I am not a human being. In the old days of Kashyapa Buddha, I was a head monk living here on this mountain. One day a student asked me, 'Does a man of enlightenment fall under the yoke of causation or not?' I answered, 'No, he does not.' Since then, I have been doomed to undergo 500 rebirths as a fox. I beg you now to give the turning word to release me from my life as a fox. Tell me, does a man of enlightenment fall under the yoke of causation or not?" Hyakujo answered, "He does not ignore causation." No sooner had the old man heard these words than he was enlightened. Making his bows, he said, "I am emancipated from my life as a fox. I shall remain on this mountain. I have a favor to ask you. Would you please bury my body as that of a dead monk?" Hyakujo had the director of the monks strike the gavel and inform everyone after the midday meal there would be a funeral service for a dead monk. The monks wondered at this, saying, "Everyone is in good health. No one is in the sick ward. What does this mean?" After the meal, Hyakujo led the monks to the foot of a rock on the far side of the mountain, and with his staff he poked out the dead body of a fox and performed the ceremony of cremation. That evening, he ascended the rostrum and told the monks the whole story. Obaku thereupon asked him, "The old man gave the wrong answer and was doomed to be a fox for 500 rebirths. Now suppose he had given the right answer, what would have happened then?" Hyakujo said, "Oh, you come here to me and I'll tell you." Obaku went up to Hyakujo and boxed his ears. Hyakujo clapped his hands with a laugh and said, "I was thinking that the barbarian had a red beard, and now I see before me the red-bearded barbarian himself." Mumon's comment, not falling under causation, how could this make the monk a fox? Not ignoring causation, how could this make the old man emancipated? Now, if you come to understand this, you will realize how old Hyakujo would have enjoyed 500 rebirths as a fox. Mumon's verse, not falling, not ignoring, two faces of one die, not ignoring, not falling, 1,000 errors, 1,000,000 mistakes. This is the third day of our winter sesshin. And what a beautiful day, right? Snow, the fresh snow is, or the snow still looks fresh and clean. Beautiful sky, sub-freezing weather. Quite lovely, really classical winter weather. And we're all here together in the Zendo, warm and safe and doing Zazen early in the morning. It's a beautiful feeling, wonderful. Deep sitting this morning. So everything's going beautifully. People are practicing wholeheartedly and coming into the Dokusan room and really showing their guts, you know, really wonderful. So This is quite an important koan, and its placement in the book is quite important. In the Mumonkan, koan number one is Mu. And Mu is quite an important koan. It's the foundation of Zen practice in the Rinzai tradition. Master Mumon, Master Umen, put this koan first. It was invented by the great Joshu. Joshu was in his 20s when he had his Daikensho experience. Had a great awakening experience. He could have just called it quits, but he was fascinated by reality as it opened up to him by this great awakening experience. And he didn't want to stop. I'm just getting going. So he looked for a teacher who could help him develop further. And he heard about a teacher named Nansen. And Joshu went to study with Nansen. And Joshu was a young man, and Nansen was fairly old. But Nansen lived a long time, and they practiced together for decades. And they had a deep affection for each other, deep karmic compatibility. And they both developed their awakened minds through their interactions. And this went on and on until Nansen died, as everybody is going to do. And then after Nansen's death, people expected Joshu to become the head of the temple. But Joshu declined, and he hit the road. And at this time in China, all over China, they were what were called public temples, just like public schools. And anybody who wanted to wake up, anybody who wanted to be liberated from birth and death, could go to a temple and practice. And monks and nuns practiced there, lay people. And you could, spend your life going from temple to temple. You had to have a letter. You carried a backpack, basically, which had your personal items. You had a letter with a seal that indicated you were ordained. And you had like a letter of recommendation from your abbot. And you could go to any temple in China and be admitted and given a room and food and responsibilities. And then you would be, expected to show up for sitting and a sesshin and so on. So Joshu hit the road, and he went all over China, and he visited many great teachers. And his adventures are recorded in various stories in the Mumonkan and in the Pi Yen Lu, in the Blue Rock collection as well. And when Joshu was quite old, like 100, he's supposed to have lived to be 120. When he was 100 or so still young, in other words, he came up with a Mu Koan. The Mu Koan was like really brilliant innovation, and it revolutionized Zen practice. It's interesting that Joshu's lineage disappeared very quickly. He had some students, but they just were, they're just finally, some of his students just didn't manage to find students who were capable. And his lineage, direct lineage, disappeared, but his teachings really hugely influenced Zen in China. And so Joshu came up with the Mu Koan at 100. And Umen included it in the Mumonkan and made it number one. So it's quite important. to practice Mushin. It's the foundation of all subsequent Zen practice in the Rinzai tradition. So number two koan is the fox koan. And that's interesting, right? Number one, it's obvious to see why that's so important. Why Mumon put it there in the book. But why did he pick the fox koan as number two? See? And this is very interesting, you know. If you're doing Zen, if you're doing Mu practice, one day when you're calling Mu, you're going to discover that there is a condition of existence in which everything disappears. So, you know, you can be sitting on your cushion going moo, 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 moo. You know, this is, what's this about? You know, moo, 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 moo. Your legs are hurting, so you say moo, 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 moo. You know, day one, moo, 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 moo. Day two, moo, 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 moo. Day three, I wonder what's on TV, you know? What are we having for lunch? Oh yeah, I have to go to my koan. Moo, 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 moo. Day four, you know. But sooner or later, what's going to happen is that you're going to notice that your mind becomes totally blank, totally empty. It will be like staring into a cave, a dark cave. Most people in the world, and there's about 7 billion of them, never noticed this. Their whole lives. In Buddhism, it's tremendously significant that in our moment-by-moment awareness, there are these places where there's absolutely nothing. And if you go there once in a while, you might think, oh, nothing. If you stay there for a while, you might think, this is boring. Or you might even feel a little bit like you're locked in a dark room by yourself. And that's not a pleasant sensation. But if you stay in Mu long enough, something is going to change. You're really going to feel quite wonderful. There's a kind of energy that comes from that emptiness, which is very important. In physics, you know, I myself know almost nothing about physics. I barely got through high school physics. Yet, I do know that physicists are very interested in the fact that the universe oscillates between something and nothing. Apparently, many physicists think that the universe is pulsing and that there's nothing and something, nothing and something. And that it coincides quite dramatically with some of the basic teachings of Buddhism. We don't use calculations, we just sit on the cushion. But eventually, if you stay in that darkness long enough, that blankness long enough, you will feel this wonderful purifying energy, and you can go back to that blankness. Sometimes it's easy to forget about that blankness, you know. But if you really go back to that blankness, and you really are blank, and you stay in that blankness long enough, you really will feel better, and you really will be energized. That energy is quite important. You can't make yourself feel it. You know, part of the Zen koan is just sitting in that blankness for a long time, and nothing seems to be happening. And it can be frustrating, right? Because you're waiting for the payoff, and you're just knocking at a door that never opens, never seems to open. But eventually it will open, and it will open, and this wonderful energy will come out. Now, even if you've been doing the Mu koan for 10 years, you can have a deep experience of Mu all over again. After finishing my training with Webb Roshi, I came to New Jersey because I had a job at Rutgers. And after a number of years of practicing by myself, I went up to practice with Edo Roshi. And I myself did not tell him anything about my background. I just sat down in the Zendo as a regular participant. When I went in to see him in Dokusan, I said, yes, I was a student of Kenki Roshi and Webb Roshi, and I finished my training. And he said, what does that mean? And I explained. And he said, okay, well, why don't you do the Mu koan? And I thought, well, wait a minute, I've already done the Mu koan many years ago. So I did the Mu koan again, and it was an astonishing experience. It was really wonderful all over again, you know, and I had a deeper experience, or a new experience of Mu, really quite deep and unlike the previous experience. So Mu is like very, can be very, you know, we think, oh, I've been there, done that. But, you know, sometimes it's possible to do shallow Mu practice, but if you're really in that emptiness, it's hugely purifying. So don't forget about that. So anyway, Mu is the foundation of our practice, and it's quite important and very liberating. In fact, the Heart Sutra says there's no obstacle that Mu cannot dissolve if you go deeply enough into it. Of course, people discover all of this while they're doing the Mu koan. And that can take years, actually, to complete. And the last part of the Mu koan, by the way, is being able to act from that emptiness. So that's why people come into the Dokusan room and call Mu. They call Mu. And when you call Mu, sometimes it's like, ooh. But sometimes people are really purifying body, mind, and heart on the cushion. And when they come in and they call Mu, it's really wonderful to hear. It's like they're an empty vessel and the universe is pouring through them. Yeah. This morning, Ilusha did the sutras. And I really think his delivery was excellent. You know, it was really coming out of his hara, and out of Mu, and there was great energy, and I didn't think it sounded artificial at all. I thought it sounded really wonderful, really real Mu energy flowing. So anyway, that's the Mu koan. Now there's this other koan that comes after the Mu koan, see? And it's the fox koan. And the fox koan's an interesting koan. It's really important. Because after a person has answered the Mu koan, people might practice a long time and begin to think, I am getting to be a really enlightened person. You know, I'm really... Now, by the way, you know, there's nothing wrong with thinking that you're making progress in Zen. You know, it's okay. You're not really being selfish or something like that. So if you say, you know, I've been practicing for 10 years, I've answered a lot of koans, I feel better about my life, you know, that's okay. That's not like a bad thought, you know. But sometimes, if we're practicing Zen for a long time, we might even have Daikensho, like a great awakening experience. And we might think, my God, you know, I'm totally clear, I'm totally clean. But nevertheless, there's a complexity to that, you know. Because even after Daikensho, people still have karma. People still have their karma, their personal makeup, their personal foibles and fears. And, you know, you might not see them very often. If you get up every morning and you sit and you do your zazen and you go to work, and you know, you might very seldom encounter your fox, you know? You might not encounter the fox very often. But then something happens, right? So, you know, you're coming to Sesshin, you have a job that you're pretty happy with, and you know, maybe your relationship is going well, you know, and everything's clicking, and then all of a sudden something happens. So you go to work one day and somebody says, you know, I'd like to call you into my office. Do you mind? You think, what could this be? They say, you know, we're closing your division down. It's like, oh my God, you're closing my division down. This actually happened to a friend of mine, you know. We're offshoring your division. And, you know, it's like, oh my God, I'm 57 years old and my division is being closed, you know. Now what, you know? And you could go back to your, you could be shocked, you know, actually, not just by the news, but by your reaction to the news. maybe your relationship hasn't been as good as you thought, you know? So, you know, basically, you've been saying, yeah, I have a good relationship, but, you know, one day your partner comes in and says, you know, I've fallen in love with somebody else. You go, what? Oh my God. We've been together for, you know, 10 years, 15 years, something like that. I met a man about a year ago. And he said he had been married for 30 years. And he was a litigator. He was a trial lawyer, and he was he had an edge, you know. His profession had made him what he was, you know. So he had a kind of an edge to him, you know. He wasn't an unmitigated nice guy, and he had kind of a sarcastic sense of humor. But he said, and you could see he was in a lot of pain, he said, my wife came home after 30 years and said, I'm leaving you and I'm going to go look for love, and left him. And he had remarried, but I could already see there were a lot of tensions between him and his wife. So, you know, I don't think he knew that was going to happen. It just happened one day, you know. And, you know, if you've been doing a lot of zazen, you can think, well, you know, I do zazen, you know. I'm sure I can deal with this. And then you go home and all of a sudden you feel frightened, right? You're frightened. Or you're lonely. Or you're generally hurting, right? And this can be really a shock to people who practice Zen, because if you're really practicing Zen, especially if you get quite accomplished at it, you know, you can forget about this part of yourself. And you might even not think it exists anymore, you know. We all have a fox, you know. I was reading about a writer named Russell Banks. Russell Banks' father was a plumbing contractor in New England. And Russell Banks is like a very famous American novelist. Quite a wonderful man. He came to Rutgers a couple times and lectured. And he was really a wonderful guy. And his father was a plumbing contractor in New England. And his father had like a make or break moment in his life where he got a big contract. It was his shot at breaking out of being a small contractor. And he got into this building project over his head. And it kind of ruined his business. He couldn't handle the scaling up. He couldn't handle it. You know, it got away from him and the project didn't work well. And Russell Banks said his dad was a really unhappy man and was physically abusive to his son. And he had a drinking problem, and he would fight with his wife, and so on and so on. And Russell Banks said, you know, I'm a big, strong man, and yet, you know, when things go wrong, I'm a little boy again. You know, when things go wrong, I find myself back in that place I was when I was a little kid, and my father was coming up the stairs, and he was going to, like, punish me physically. And I'm, like, terrified, and I feel totally powerless, you know. And Russell Banks said, you know, that's been with me all my life. You know, and he's actually written about this a couple times. And he talked about how it had made him a very angry person, and hard to live with, and so on. You know, that's Russell Banks' fox. You know, it's like where we go when things are not going well. You know, we carry with us this karma, often from events in our early life, but not always in our early life, you know, could be later. But, that was Russell Banks's fox, you know. My mother was an interesting person, you know. She grew up in real poverty. My grandfather was like a dairy farmer in northern New York State. And you know, that's really like a terrible life. You know, very little money. My grandfather lost his land, his house, during the Great Depression. And he had to go live with, my grandmother had to go live with the governor of New York and work as a cook in her house. And my grandfather became a hired hand, a hired agricultural worker. And my mother lived with my father in like a bunkhouse in upstate New York as a little girl. And her job was to get up early in the morning and cook breakfast for all the hands on this farm. And then she would go off to school. And my mother said, you know, all her girlfriends would say, you know, come over to my house, you know, and basically they would, go over to each other's house, and they'd say, well, Joyce, when are we going to come over to your house? And my mother didn't have a house, you know, she had a bunk in a bunkhouse, you know. And she was so ashamed of that, you know. And she had no mother, her mother was away, her sisters were, her older sister was working in a department store, her brother was somewhere else, you know. So, you know, when my mother was not at her best, you know, she would be a little girl living in a bunkhouse, you know, and so on and so on. And, you know, we leave that person behind as we grow up, you know, but we never leave that person behind in a certain way, you know. And that's our fox, you know. It's like a fox. You know, we kid ourselves sometimes. We think, well, I've left that far behind, you know. But if you look carefully, you can sometimes see your fox peeking out, you know. Sometimes you can see it, you know. And don't let it throw you, you know. Don't let it throw you. Don't let it, it doesn't. You know, if you think that Zen practice is going to liberate you from all karma, you're right. But a person who is totally liberated from all karma, we have a word for a person in Buddhism, we have a technical term for a person who is liberated from all karma. The term is Buddha, okay? You know. So a Buddha is somebody who is totally liberated from all karma, okay? So that person has no fox. All other human beings have a fox, Okay? And sometimes in Zen practice, you encounter your fox, you know? So there might be a moment in your Zen practice where you're down. You find yourself down, you know? You're feeling helpless, or you're feeling vulnerable, or you're feeling angry. You think, why am I angry? You know, there are people who I've had worked with people over the years. You know, somebody who's come to Sesshin, day one, very sweet. Day two, very sweet. Day three, it's like furious, right? And you think, wow, where is that coming from, right? That's a fox. You know, that's somebody's fox. And, you know, basically, there's a lot of, you know, it's not negativity, right? I think, you know, in America, we're addicted to positive thinking, you know? So we don't permit ourselves to see our fox. You know, in America, everybody's supposed to go around with a big smile on his face. We're all supposed to be happy and cheerful, right? And actually, being happy is what Buddhism is all about. But it has to be real, you know? So it can't be like mandatory happiness, you know? In America, our culture expects everybody, you know, if you look on TV, everybody's, unless it's like a police drama, you know, sort of like situation comedy, everybody is just walking around telling jokes and laughing, you know, and having a great time. Salesmen always smile, you know. Part of American culture is like this cult of mandatory happiness, you know. But I think real, true happiness, real joy, requires recalling our fox. You know, requires us sometimes. You don't have to go looking for your fox; it'll turn up. You know, but it often happens. You often run into your fox when you've had some kind of a personal defeat. You know, so or an injury. So, you know, you're not going to find your fox. You know, when you go to work and the boss says, brilliant, you're doing a brilliant job, you know, have a raise, you know. That's not going to happen. You're not going to find your fox when, you know, you're talking to somebody who, pays you compliments all the time, you know. when you get a pink slip, when you get a rejection notice, when you give the audition and they say, thank you, you know, thanks a lot, you know, with a big smile, right? Big smile, thank you. We'll be in touch. Meaning, we won't be in touch, right? We won't. When that happens, right, you know, you go home and you think, oh, that's when the fox peeks out, right? And you suddenly think, oh my God, you know, he's coming up the stairs. Or you think, you know, I'm in the bunkhouse and the wind is blowing in, you know, through the boards in the floor, and there's absolutely no one around, and I'm all by myself, you know. And you go back to that position, you know, that sort of like that place. And, people who get depressed get stuck there. You know, that's like you get stuck with your fox, you know. It is possible, I think, to you know, to try not to see the fox, you know. I don't have a fox. But I think a lot of trouble is caused by that, you know. That causes a lot of problems. Some of you might have heard about the recent events at a Zen center called Daibosatsu Zendo in New York, where the teacher, the Zen master there, was finally removed for having sexual relations with his students over many, many years. And he would have sexual relations with a student, and then he'd get caught, and he'd, you know, confess and give an apology, and everybody, you know, about half the community would leave. And then he'd say, I promise not to do it again. You know where this is going, right? And he'd do it again, like in about 4 years, you know. And this was going on through his whole career. And he's a brilliant person. He's brilliant, charming, charismatic, you know. And people would make excuses for him. And there's been some publication on this, you know, writing about this. And mostly it's like moralizing. It's like he was a bad Roshi, you know. He was a really bad Roshi. He was supposed to be good, and he was bad. You know? You shouldn't be bad, you should be good, you know. But I don't think people understand that this teacher had a big fox, you know, that he wasn't aware of. I think he was trapped in a lonely room by himself, all alone, you know. I don't know what his personal history is, but I think he was dying for affection and human contact, and other things that we all need, right? Need to be mentally healthy. And I think he didn't get it. And maybe he didn't let people in. You know, maybe he didn't, he was afraid to let people be close to him. But I think he created a unhealthy situation for himself because he didn't confront his fox. We're afraid of the fox because we think if I admit to having a fox, it means all my practice has been bullshit, right? You know, I mean, Eido Roshi, I know, had had Daikensho. So you might say, how can a man have Daikensho and still have a fox? But see, all humans have a fox. You know, the problem is when we don't recognize our fox. And we say, I've had Daikensho, I have no fox, you know. No, that's the road to disaster, right? Because, you know, when we're in the spell of our fox, we do things compulsively. If you've been physically abused as a child, you know, you've had this experience of being powerless and nobody's come to your rescue. And when you're in that state, you know, you'll make all kinds of bad decisions because you're terrified, you know. And if you've been abandoned, you know, and you grew up like my mother did, alone, you know, my mother stayed with my dad, who was a really terrible husband, you know, for years and years and years and years until he finally abandoned her, you know. And why did she stay with him? Because he was such a jerk, you know. Because she was stuck in that room in upstate New York, you know. It would have been so good if my mother could have said, okay, I know I can be like this sometime. You know, but my mother did lots of other things, you know. She was a legal secretary. She became a court reporter. You know, she got a real estate license and sold real estate. She was an administrative assistant for many years. So, you know, my mother did lots of things that were you know, she was a very capable person. But she forgot about that. And she always imagined herself in moments of stress as a little girl in a room in upstate New York. You know, so we all have our fox, you know, and it's important to be aware of the fox and to realize, you know, there's more to our lives than our fox, you know. I mean, when we sit on the cushion, you know, we can experience Mushin, and we experience this deep connectedness to the world around us, you know, deep connectedness, and real energy, people come into the Dokusan room sometime, and they really call Mu. You know, when I was listening to Ilusha reciting the sutras, I don't want to make him embarrassed, but I just thought, oh, that's perfect, you know. There's real joyous energy in that, you know. If you're going to do something, you know, ideally, do it with joyous energy. And it's not always possible to do that naturally, right, you know. And so it's a little artificial sometimes, but sometimes it just comes out, you know. You know, if you're going to recite the sutra, one way to recite the sutra is go, Shuja Muhen Sing, you know, or some people... You know, I mean, I've seen all kinds of styles in, you know, some people, you know, they don't even actually say the words. Some people are, Juta Muens Tegando Ba, you know. And some people go, Shujo Muen, you know, that's great, you know. You know, I mean, there are some people who say, we used to have a guy here who wanted to be noticed. So he would never recite the sutras in sync with everybody else. He'd always be like behind. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about. He's gone now, you know. But he would recite the sutras. We'd be going, you know, the great way is not difficult. And you hear this. We'd be, the great way is not difficult. Not difficult. You know? And when love and hate are both absent. You know, so you're trailing along, and after a while it was like having blurred vision, you know, with your sense of sound. This guy was constant; it was almost insane. You know, after a while, it's like, would you stop? You know, but he clearly wanted to be noticed. You know, that's a little different thing. You know, so nobody wants to be a big ham, right? But there's nothing wrong with reciting the sutras from your heart, you know, and it's embarrassing, right, sometimes to be open and energetic, you know, you know, it's okay, you know, it's the best way to be, you know, sometimes when we're open and energetic, it creates tensions and resentments and so on, and that is a difficult situation, you know. But you know, the important thing is to be alive, you know, and not to be too daunted by our setbacks, you know, and to realize that we all have a fox. You know, getting to know your fox is so important because, you know. Otherwise, we just think it's who we are. You know, when we're on the cushion, sometimes we realize our thoughts are just bullshit. You know, we're having a bunch of thoughts, and we just realize, you know, that's bullshit. You know, and you go back to Mu, or you go back to your breath. But sometimes there are thoughts that are very compelling because they're close to our fox, see? And those are thoughts like, you know, I'm helpless. There's nothing I can do. I'm trapped, you know. Or I'm worthless, you know. Or, you know, I'm an idiot, you know. Those are generally those kinds of feelings and ideas are very close to our fox, you know. And so it's very important when you find yourself getting into those cycles to realize, fox, this is my fox, you know. And realize there's more to me than my fox. You know, I've encountered, you know, vast emptiness. I've encountered boundless compassion. I've encountered, you know, energy, you know, unquenchable energy. You know, at Sesshin, I'm sure you've discovered, you know, there's like unquenchable energy. You know, when you're just beginning, it's important to get plenty of sleep. But at some point, you're not going to be able to sleep anymore, you know. I myself have been a little bit sick, you know. But I can't sleep. The first night, I went into my bedroom at 7 o'clock after dinner, and I thought, okay, I'm sick. I just lay there. I couldn't sleep, you know. And I just can't. You know, and I don't think it's neurotic. I think it's just energy, you know. You know, you're going to have those moments where you just feel really alive. And so, you know, don't take it's important to be aware of your fox, you know. And if you get trapped in a box with your fox, you know, you can get depressed, right? And then you think, there's no way out of this, right? There's no way out. I'm trapped, right? And that's usually, you realize that is like the mark of delusional thinking, right? I mean, there's always something you can do. There's always something you can do. You know, when things are not going well, it's important to reach out to other people and to your friends. And lots of human contacts are important. It's important to do zazen, and it's important to try to try or explore new avenues, right? So if you're stuck in a job you don't like for a long time, you know, there's usually some job you can find that you might like more. It's very important. I wish I had written it down, but there's a wonderful song by Cole Porter. I talked about it at one of the earlier Saturday sits, you know. It's called, if you Google it, it's called Experiment. It's wonderful. It's something like this. He says, we've all learned our reliance on the sacred teachings of science, you know. And he says, and you know, there's a lesson in, I can't get it exactly right, but there's a lesson in science for all of us, you know, and we really need to learn it. And the lesson is this, experiment. See? He says, experiment. You know, he says, make that your motto day and night. Experiment, and it will lead you to the light. He says, you know, disapproving friends may frown, but, you know, don't let them hold you down. You should be furious. And, don't get furious. Don't let anybody stop you from being curious. See? And he said, experiment, and it will lead you to the light. I just think that's Buddhism 101, you know. Cole Porter was one of these guys who was born rich, you know, which must be great, you know, I guess, you know. He was born rich. His family were like these really rich, you know, people. And he was raised as a Baptist, you know. And his family expected him to become a lawyer, and they sent him to like Yale Law School. And he had his life all planned out for him by his parents. And there was only one problem. Cole Porter was gay. And not only that, he had two problems, sorry. One of them was that he was gay. The other one was he wanted to write popular music. He didn't want to be a lawyer. And so he went to Paris, and it was easier to be gay in Paris than in New York at that time. And he was able to explore his identity in that context. And he started writing songs. And he later wrote some beautiful Broadway plays, Kiss Me, Kate. And, you know, he had to do a lot of things that were difficult and risky. You know, at that time, to come out of the closet as a gay male was very difficult. He never totally came out of the closet. He married a woman who was really not interested in him as a partner sexually, but just wanted a life partner, and they maintained a fiction of having a marriage, but it was very well known that he was gay. And Porter was this tremendously creative, lively person, and I think it was because he was willing to experiment. You know, he could have said, "Oh, gee, you know, my parents want me to be a lawyer. There's nothing I can do. I've got to be a lawyer." You know, and so he could have worked in a New York law office, and he could have said, "Well, you know, my parents want me to be a Baptist. I have to be a Baptist. There's no way out, you know." And he could have said, "You know, gee, I really like men, you know, but, I there's no way out, right?" But he didn't do those things. You know, he experimented. And I think he saw the light. You know, so it's important to be true to your true nature and not to be intimidated by your fox. Yeah, and we all get knocked on our asses, and we all suddenly get knocked on our asses, and this little fox scampers over, you know, and he says, no good. You know, you're trapped. You have to do it. You know. But we've all learned our reliance on the sacred teachings of science. You know, experiment. Make that your motto day and night. Experiment. And it will lead you to the light. Oh. It should be in the Mumonkan. Not falling under causation, how could this make a monk a fox? Not ignoring causation, how could this make the old man emancipated? If you come to understand this, you will realize how old Hyakujo could have enjoyed 500 rebirths as a fox. Not falling, not ignoring, two faces of one die, not ignoring, not falling, 1,000 errors, 1,000,000 mistakes. The fox always comes to us and goes, you know, now that was a big mistake. You know, but there's no other way to live except to make mistakes. You know. So anyway, you're doing a wonderful job. Please enter deep samadhi. If you run into a fox, don't be scared, okay? You have to see your fox. You have to embrace your fox. You have to know your fox. If you pretend to have no fox, you definitely have a fox. That's what positive thinking is like evil, really, you know? It's like, I don't have any problems. Everything's great. It's like, no. Let's look at our problems. Okay. Oh my God, I'm helpless, I'm trapped. You see, no. Those are not the only choices, right? You see the fox, but you also encounter boundless emptiness, deep connectedness, indestructible energy. Now you can deal with your fox.